Hello and welcome to the TAA teleconference, Fresh Eyes, How Working with an Editor Can Improve Your Work, by Laura Poole. Laura Poole is a professional scholarly copy editor with 15 years of experience in publishing. She has run her own company, Archer Editorial Services, for the past 12 years. She has worked for Duke University Press, Wiley, and Oxford University Press. Her topic specialties include medical and scientific texts and mathematics texts. She also trains people in copy editing and proofreading and offers a referral service for those wanting to hire freelance editors. She recently joined TAA and offers a 20% discount to members. Laura is married and lives in Durham, North Carolina. She is also a certified professional life coach. I now turn the teleconference over to Laura.
Well, thank you, Kim. That was a lovely introduction. I wrote some of that. So I'm really excited to talk about how authors can work with editors and how it can improve your work. And I'm going to talk about how it can improve your work on a very broad level and not just improve a specific publication, but how it can benefit you in a lot of different areas. So if you've had the handout, which I believe the link was sent for that, you'll see that it's sort of broken into four sections: types of editors, what they do, which I'll cover first, why work with and hire an editor, learning from an editor, and how to find an editor to hire. And I'm going to talk about stuff. I'm going to tell a lot of stories because I believe that's the best way to show an example of what you do. And at the end of each section, I'll be happy to take questions. And I would also invite you to share your experiences. If you hear like, oh, I've done that, I would love to hear briefly from you about your experience with working with an editor on any of these levels. So I'll go ahead and jump in to types of editors and what they do, and then we'll take a pause for questions, and I'll remind you at that time that you can press 4-star to unmute yourself. So the types of editors and what they do. And when I talk about editors, I'm talking about people who work on a manuscript after it has been written, or in some cases, as it's being written. As a freelance editor, I tend to work for publishers, and I tend to work on books, so that's pretty much what I'm going to focus on. Although if you write a lot of journal articles or web materials, there can be a very similar process. So the highest level of editing that you might want for your work is called developmental editing. And a developmental editor, or if this person works at a university press, it might be called the acquisitions editor, or a freelancer might even be called a book doctor. This level of editing is substantive work on whatever you're getting ready to publish, whether it's your article or your book. And there's a lot of sort of cohesive big picture things that a developmental editor will work on. The one thing they can do is make sure that the organization of the book makes sense, that the chapters flow and make sense, that the sections within the chapter are complete, that's where to go, that the sections are complete. For instance, you wouldn't want to be missing something that was a recent update in the field. You might need a new chapter to do that, and a developmental or acquisitions editor can help you make that decision. You also, at this level, an editor can help you determine the material that is appropriate, help you identify your audience. It makes a very big difference if you're writing for the lay public who might not understand, say, macroeconomic theory, or if you're writing a theory textbook for a graduate level class. They'll understand a lot of those terms. Developmental editor can help you keep that big picture in mind. Now, some benefits of working with an editor at this level of development is that you get a lot of creative collaboration. The writer and the editor can join somewhat evenly in this task to co-create a really powerful text. And this can stir up and free your imagination within the bounds of what you want to say. A developmental editor can help you clarify the flow of your point, make sure your material is complete, and help you eliminate redundancy. A good collaborator at this stage can help you think of things you haven't thought of before, which can strengthen the book overall. It might even suggest more ideas for new books and new publications you can write. A developmental editor can also help you make sure that your support materials, like your tables, your figures, your box text, any review questions or anything like that, is appropriate and enlightening. I'll give you an example of this. Back in the early days when I just started my business, I was working with a computer book publisher that is now no longer in business, And I ended up doing some developmental editing on a book. And here's an interesting case. I was working with the first chapter where the author had, if you want more information about XYZ, go to the website for this company. And then he would say, see figure one. And figure one was a screenshot of the homepage for that company's webpage. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that although this author had 35 figures in the chapter, he didn't need the figures at all. All he really needed was URL, the web address, because he's just saying, go to this site, instead of look at what an effective use of graphics are on this site. So when you're just pointing someone to a site, a URL or even a bullet list would have been much more appropriate than a figure in that case. And we were able to work together to make the text appropriate. And a few years later, I was working on a book through another press, and it was called The Unofficial Guide to Hiring a Contractor. I was hired to copy edit the book, but I started noticing a lot of problems with the text as I went along, that it was incomplete, and that frequently the author would admit he didn't know something, which generally might be okay, but in this case, the author was supposed to be the expert, which is why he was writing the book. So I ended up talking to the publisher and developing the book a little bit, which was really interesting. And I'll give you an example of where and why development was appropriate for this book. The book was about how to hire a contractor to do work around your house, construction, and such. And the whole chapter on contracting for bathroom updates, like you could have enough vanity, he talks about all the different options available. And then he mentioned one option for your bathroom is to have a bidet installed. But then the author went on to say, I don't really know what it does, but a friend of mine says they're wonderful. I was like, well, that's very nice, and it's approachable and conversational statement. But the author really needed to put in something to explain what it was, why people might want it, and what they should think about when hiring a contractor. So it wasn't my job to actually fill that in, although I suggested a way the author might have done that. But in the end, the book was stronger. It was more comprehensive. And it really offered a lot of value to the readers, which is the point of developmental editing. Now, sometimes at the same time that developmental editing is going on, or maybe just a little bit after, your publisher or you personally may decide to have a technical edit or a technical review. This is particularly important when there's mathematics, when there's computer code or software code, anything that's asking the reader to read through and trust as correct needs to be reviewed, preferably by someone who is an expert in that field. Because a simple typo can make a huge mess for your readers. And it can cause like lots of errata, maybe have to be, on the companion website for this, we had a slight mistake on the code on page 35 and 70 and 120 and 125. It's a little bit embarrassing. And it can make you look bad. You don't want to look bad. The point of publishing something is to look good and to put your content out there in a way that people trust you and can learn from you. If there's mistakes that aren't your fault, then it's good to have a technical editor to find these things. They can find your mistakes, make corrections in technical aspects of your text, possibly suggest simpler solutions, and they can definitely make sure your content is up to date. I'm not a technical editor. I haven't been one. It's a very specialized field, so I don't have a whole lot else to say about that because it's not my specialty. But if you've got a highly technical text, especially with engineering or software, it's really good to have someone review it and check those kind of technical errors just to make sure that everything's cool. Now, as the manuscript is getting ready for completion, the copy editor, sometimes called the line editor, comes in for the last round of editing. Now, in the publishing process, copy editing is done just before the manuscript is sent to typesetting. So it is the final draft that has been submitted by the author. All changes made by the developer have been made. Any corrections suggested by the technical editor have been made. Any other changes, any other material that needs to be put in place is all in place. Essentially, the manuscript is complete. And then it goes to a copy editor. Now, if you have a publication that has not been accepted for publishing yet, you can hire a freelance copy editor to do this. But you'll need to make sure you get that editor the final draft. There's no more missing material. There's nothing left behind. And this is what I do. I'm a professional copy editor, and I really enjoy this phase of editing. And what I do here is I check grammar, but it's more accurate to say I check word usage. Spelling, of course, punctuation, clarity, a little basic fact-checking, nothing too heavy, house style, which can vary from publisher to publisher. And I'll also do things like check to make sure that all the headers are numbered correctly, all the figures and tables are numbered and placed correctly, and that they're effective. For instance, you don't want a table that has 18 rows but only 3 columns. The copy editor might catch that and suggest that you reformat it so that it has more columns than rows. And I make sure the flow and clarity are there. I consider my job is tweaking good writing so that it's even better. If copy editing has been done well, you should know it, and it will make the author look good, and it will make the publisher look good. A little copy editing, even light changes here and there, can make a world of difference to a text, and it can really make sure that your readers get your point. They're not going to get tripped up in your language. And that's what I really enjoy doing. There is a final phase called proofreading. And a lot of people think a lot of people ask for proofreading, and what they mean is copy editing. But in the publishing world, proofreading takes place after a manuscript has been typeset. So it's already been copy edited, it's been sent to typesetting, so it appears like it will appear when it's published. And the proofreader goes behind and checks for a lot of different things. They won't be making any major changes to the text, because that's expensive to correct at this phase. But they will check for things the copy editor might have missed and will make sure the typesetter has laid everything out correctly. For instance, there's the right number of space between the header and the text. The indents are all placed correctly. The tables and figures have been placed near their callouts, and so on. The benefits of a proofreader mostly accrue to the publisher because it helps to make sure the book is readable by catching typesetting errors and anything the copy editor might have missed. Might not always have a lot of contact with a proofreader, but they really can help your text in a number of little ways you might be surprised about. It pays to know a little bit about typesetting at this phase. So I've covered developmental editing, technical editing, copy editing, and proofreading. I'd like to open up the floor to take any questions or comments. You can press 4-star to unmute yourself. Not hearing any questions yet.
Hello.
Hello. What's your question, please?
My question.
Hi, I'm Laura.
Hi, my name is Janella, and I'm calling. I'm actually want to ask you a question. I have a book that I'm actually in the process of completing, and based on the four, I didn't even realize it has so many types of editors, and I'm happy I'm at this conference. And I'm wondering if my book is finished, and the person who's looking at my book was the publisher recommended me to her, and she, I believe she's a copy editor based on the description you gave me.
Okay.
At this point, I'm looking over my manuscript, and I'm still seeing some things that, you know, I'm proofreading. So you're saying that there's still another stage that I would be going through before it's actually published, the book is published.
Quite possibly. Many publishers will suggest that their authors get copy edited before they accept the book, and then the publisher might pay editors to have another round on it.
Okay, so what? Another question I have is that I have a title for my book, but they're going to, is it normal for them to change the title of the book in the phase of copy editing?
That is a good question. I believe it is somewhat common, and that should be a creative conversation that you have with whoever accepts the book. That would be your acquisitions editor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that should be an agreement you come to together.
Okay.
I've only ever done copy editing. I've not done acquisitions, so I've never worked with someone on the title.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put that caveat out there. But if they want to change the title, they should suggest one, and they should give you the reasoning behind it.
Okay.
If you agree.
Okay. And also another question is that you're saying that most of the time, for example, for articles, published articles, you would more or less solicit copy editors for your...
You might.
Okay. Okay.
You might, if you want to make sure, and I'll get to that in just a minute about why you might want to work with and hire an editor.
Okay.
The idea of copy editing is that your content then flows. And if you're submitting an article to a review board, you want to make sure they read your comment and not get tripped up in any grammar issues, because then they'll really be evaluating your work on its content merits.
Okay. Would you be also covering, especially for junior-level faculty members, here at the conference, what the price range would be in terms of, you know, copy editing, because sometimes we don't know, you know, what we need to be looking out for, and in terms of all the four bullet points you covered, it may have different price points for different editors.
Sure. I can definitely be covering the cost for copy editors.
Okay.
And I haven't worked with technical editors much lately. They will charge more. So part of the thing I'm going to talk today is how to find an editor to work with, and it's best to get quotes from them, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, and remind me if I forget, okay?
And I mute myself by star four.
Four star.
Four star. Okay, thank you.
I thought I heard someone else on their line. What is your question, please?
I'm Mara. I have a question. One is I don't know really what you mean by house style.
Ooh, house style, that's great. Have you heard of the Chicago Manual of Style?
Yes.
Yes. The Chicago Manual Style is kind of a general guideline of style things, and a lot of it has to do with how you cite your references,
mm-hmm.
or how you use the serial comma, or how you can use capitalization rules. Well, house style refers to specific requests that each publisher has.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I work with a lot of publishers who say, we base our style off the Chicago Manual of Style, and then here's things we specifically like to see.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank you. Yeah, I wanted to encourage the previous person who asked a question to get the copy editor. I mean, my last book, I'm a mathematician, so it's very technical what I write. And I published with the American Math Society, and since English is not my native language, I insisted of having a copy editor, and the AMS provided that, so I didn't have to pay. I was lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a marvelous job. I mean, I was flabbergasted. It was really, really great, and she really made it a better book. So, and also about the title, actually, my acquisitions director about this book, he actually suggested a different title.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about this, and then I went along with him, and afterwards I have to say he was right. He was absolutely right. So I would take this into serious consideration when they think the title should be changed. I mean, so.
Oh. Thank you for the comments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did I answer the question about house styles?
Yeah, I understand this now, yeah.
Great,
mm-hmm.
Okay,
thank
good, thank you. Are there any other questions?
This is Richard.
Hi, Richard, what's your question?
Well, I had a comment about house style. Mm-hmm. I work with a publisher that has a house style that includes not only references and citations and whether to put things at the end of chapters or at the end of the book, but also house style with respect to the content, the verbiage in the text. This is perhaps more common in my field of philosophy. And it's quite severe. The aim is to try to disabuse authors of the stilted, as it were, kind of language that we sometimes acquire listening to our professors, and to try to shorten the actual verbiage, the actual length of the text, by cutting out superfluous, extraneous words. It's extraordinarily difficult for people to conform to that, and is often a source of great stress. I think that having a copy editor between the author and the publisher eases some of that stress.
I believe it can, and thank you for that comment. In fact, that kind of leads right into my next section. If we have no more questions, I'll go ahead and continue. but we'll take more breaks for questions. All right, so the next section was why work with or hire for yourself an editor. Now, if your publication has been accepted by a publisher, they may provide the editors to you, and embrace that. In fact, check your contract, because it probably will require that your work is copy edited or you work with the acquisitions editor. That's pretty standard at university presses. So why you could work with and hire an editor, there's a couple of things to keep in mind, and I mentioned some of them. One is about the, you know, making sure your work is tweaked to be the best possible it can be, making sure your content is what is read so that your readers aren't getting tripped up in your words. But it comes down to what you said about you're too close to the book. You're too close to your own writing to be able to see it objectively, and that's standard. I do some writing, and I cannot edit my own writing. I cannot see my own typos. And I make them, folks. I really do. I've embarrassed myself sometimes. I posted an event notice that said, come to the Profo Reading Boot Camp instead of the Proofreading Boot Camp, which then, ironically, proved my point that you can't edit your own work. Once you have typed something or written something, it's very difficult to read it fresh because your mind will fix it for you as you read it. So having that set of fresh eyes, which is why I titled this seminar Fresh Eyes, can be a huge benefit. The fresh eyes can stimulate you to think of something you might not have thought before. They can question you in a good way to bring out the best of your content. If you're trusting someone to tweak it, then you can be focused on the creative end of it, the creativity and the content, while you can have an editor come behind you and tweak it to make it the best it can be. You'll be offering a stronger product, a better product to publishers or to your readers. And that kind of thing builds your professional reputation. You'll also probably learn a lot of tricks from an editor, which is what I'll talk about, some specifics of that in the next session, learning from an editor. But you also, if you hire an editor before you submit to a publisher, you probably increase your chances of being accepted for publication. Again, because publishers will read your content and be engaged with your content. If you trip over a typo, and I'm sure all of you have noticed this in your reading for fun. I read fiction for fun. I edit nonfiction for work. But I can't stand it when a book I'm reading has typos, typographical errors, or typesetting problems like widows and orphans. I get angry, and I don't want to read it, and I interrupt my flow of whatever the story is. An editor can help prevent that from happening. And it's, I liken it a little bit to doing all your own work for a long time and then suddenly having the benefit of having an admin assistant who can help you with the details of things so you get to focus on what you want to focus on in your career. Hiring an editor is a little bit like that. It takes care of some of the, you know, can focus you on the bigger issues and can then take care of some of the details so that what you put out is really powerful and really good stuff. And it can really build your professional reputation. As you know, it's a publisher parish in the scholarly field. But when you can learn from your editor and learn better writing techniques and communication techniques, that's going to show up in a lot of places. It's going to show up in your written communication, if you blog, in your articles. It might show up in your oral communication, when you're teaching, when you're networking. It's a pretty powerful thing. It all snowballs. So the benefit of fresh eyes at several different levels, even if you hire more than one editor, is pretty powerful. I don't know if anybody's tried to edit their own work. I try it on occasion, and I'll actually give you two tips for editing your own work, which I still think are somewhat limited, or at least I've experienced limitations with trying to edit my own work this way. One thing to do is you need to wait a while before you edit your own work. If you've just written it, it needs to sit for a week or two before you come back, and you can try to hold sort of the objective viewpoint. The second trick is to change the margins. This is pretty simple. If you change the margins on the document that you want to edit, to bring them in an extra 2 inches, all the lines break in a different place, which means you will see the text on the screen differently. And it can help you spot things like where you typed you when you meant your. That's a very common one. Or where you had a misspelling that your head sort of, your brain sort of fixed for you while your eyes glossed over it. So that was kind of a quick section on why you might want to work with and hire an editor. I'd like to invite questions, or I appreciate the experiences that have been offered. Does anybody have something to add?
It's Richard again.
Richard, hi.
Hi. You didn't say, or if I, excuse me if I missed it, but I don't think you said anything about built-in word processing text editors. How reliable are they, and what do you advise about their use?
Like a text editor in like the spell checker and grammar checker?
Right, right, right.
Okay. Those are great tools. I do recommend them. I don't use the grammar checker myself, but I do use a spell checker. But there's more to, if you're, especially if you're hiring a copy editor, because I get this a lot. People said, you just text spelling and grammar? I'm like, well, that would be easy. But a copy editor and editors do more than that. A copy editor can do creative decision-making, creative problem-solving within your text. For instance, a spell checker might not catch the homonyms, of course. And some of them you really don't want to change, like discrete. There's two different correct spellings of the word discrete, and they mean very different things. Spell checker's not going to catch that. Whereas a copy editor who's tuned to the differences between words is going to catch something like that. An editor can also tell you things like you haven't find this, you have this, see, you have the word ASF, the acronym. So you haven't defined what ASF is. And you don't define it in the chapter, what does it mean? Do you need to spell it out? Or will your audience understand what you mean? And is it okay to leave it as an abbreviation? Or in some cases, the publisher requires that you spell this out at first use, and you haven't used it, so I don't know what it means. An editor is also going to make sure that your notes match up correctly, that you're citing the correct stuff, and that everything in your bibliography is actually cited in the text, and everything that's cited in the text appears in the bibliography. These are things above and beyond what Word and various plugins can do. Those plugins are useful, don't get me wrong, but they're not going to give you a complete editing. Does that make sense? I hope it answers your question.
Laura, I have
so, thank you.
Okay. Sorry, your
Hi,
question,
Laura.
Yes.
Yeah, please. I have a question. You mentioned about two things when we edit ourselves. One, you said we should wait after finishing the writing. And second, you said margins. I didn't get that proper. Could you just elaborate?
Okay. I'll do the margins question first. The margin is the space on either side of a page when it's printed. So you might have 1-inch margins all around, which means the text will be 1 inch from the top, 1 inch from the bottom, and 1 inch in on either side.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to see your work freshly, you can change one of the margins, particularly the right-hand margin. If you make it 2 inches, the block will be shorter and the text will appear differently. It makes it a little easier to read with fresh.
Okay.
Gotcha. Does that make sense? And
yeah.
What was your other question again?
That's it.
Thank you. Okay. Great. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, here's Mara again. I love this tip about the margins, by the way. I never thought. I mean, we are since you do math books, you know, we are playing with the text system called TeX.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. We have all these, we have, of course, a lot of tools there available. But I would also like to emphasize that, I mean, in contrast to a journal article, a book is out there for many years.
Yes.
So, and making a second edition might not happen because it's very expensive. So I think it's extremely important to get it right in the first place.
It is. And the more eyes can have on it, it may get a little complicated listening to everybody, but it will, in the end, it will benefit the final product.
Mm-hmm.
Was there another comment or question? Okay, I'm not hearing any more comments or questions. So you can do 4-star to mute yourself. I'm going to get into learning from an editor, what you can learn from an editor. And in this section, I'll specifically be talking about what you can learn from a copy editor. But you can kind of extrapolate what the other levels of editing can teach you. And I'm going to start this off with a story. My very first client I was still in college. Oh, my goodness. Sorry, I just had a problem with my phone. Can everybody hear me okay? I hope you can. My phone just told me I had an invalid option. Okay, plugging on. So I was still in college, and I offered to edit a paper for a colleague of mine. I had just gotten into publishing and editing, was very excited about it. And he took me up on that. I did it for free because I was learning. And he said, well, I'm told I have a lot of run-on sentences. So if you could look out for that, that'd be great. I said, okay. And I took my red pen, and I edited his paper until it was practically bleeding ink. This was back in the days of red ink on paper. And I made a list of things that I found that he was doing. And some of those things were that he didn't know how to properly use a semicolon, so I was correcting that a lot. And I was explaining the first couple of times, you know, you're not using this right, you should do it this way. I noticed he uses a lot of passive verbs, like is, which is sometimes appropriate, but in many cases he didn't need it and could use an active verb, like move or go. And so I was changing that. He also used a lot of what we call dead subjects, which is the word it or they, where they doesn't mean anything, or it doesn't really have an antecedent. So it is important. It doesn't really mean anything in that phrase. And so he was using a lot of that, and I was changing that to have real subjects and active verbs in the sentence. And he often started sentences with prepositions like yet, and, or but. And so I was frequently changing that. So I had this very heavily marked up paper and a list of things that he might want to think about. Thank goodness he was my friend because he didn't take offense at it. But he took it back. He took the paper back from me and then said, my goodness, you did more work on this than I did. And I said, well, all of it's a suggestion. And when somebody edits your work, all of their work is a suggestion. You don't have to accept every single change. But later that week, he called me and he said, you know what? I've had other friends and colleagues edit my work, and I take maybe 50% of their suggestions, but I'm taking 95% of yours. And then he told me when he turned the paper in that the professor said, wow, your readability exceeded your content, which was maybe not what he was going for, but finally she was getting the point. So learning, and after that, he came to me several times and wanted me to edit his papers. I edited his dissertation. I edited the book his dissertation turned into, although he didn't need me anymore. His writing improved so much, but I kept telling him, you don't need me. I can't take your money. Your writing is fine. You really don't need another copy editor at this stage. But he insisted on coming to me. But it improved his work overall, and it was an amazing thing to be with him in that journey. So some of the things an editor can teach you are how to think creatively about your text. They can help remind you of who your audience is and to think in terms of your audience, which can help you design a good text if you think, what does my audience want to know, as well as what do I want to teach them? How can I explain this to my audience so that they understand? An editor can help you find and strengthen your writing strengths and your weaknesses. So a little teaching can be interesting. I was impressed. This guy has never misused a semicolon after that first paper. He really got it after that, and he was willing to learn and grow with it. An editor can also help you improve your flow, your style, and your clarity. And sometimes this means correcting statements that don't really make, that you didn't realize were confused, like a mixed metaphor is common. And my favorite story in this regard is I was working with an author who was generally very good, and it was the fourth or fifth edition of his textbook, and I was enjoying working on it. But he had the phrase, play it close to my chest. I believe it's a phrase for poker or card playing. I'm going to play this situation close to my chest. But that was actually an incorrect version of that idiom. The correct version is play it close to the vest. So I changed it. I put play it close to the vest. And the author was like, whoa, wait a minute. Really? Is that the correct one? But I've always said it close to my chest. It sounds so much more personal. Could we do that? And I had to say, well, no, because one of my jobs as an editor is to preserve the language, but also to make it correct. Another interesting example is the phrase vicious cycle. Someone once once asked me, is it vicious cycle or vicious circle? And frankly, I didn't know. So I looked it up in the dictionary, and it is vicious circle. The cycle is a circle, I suppose. So whenever I see the phrase vicious cycle, I change it. And if the writer queries me, I'll say, well, you know, you can go back to the way it was if you really feel strongly about it and you're willing to fight for it. But according to Webster's, which is the dictionary that this press uses, we go by their preferred spelling, and it's vicious circle by their preferred spelling. So it's going to make you look smart. A good editor can make you look smart, can key you into some of these phrases that can get easily confused, can help you use appropriate support materials. I'm working on a book right now that has quite a lot of tables, and some of the tables only have one row of data, and it's information about a prescription drug, what its generic name is, how it appears, whether it's intravenous or a pill you can take or a topical lotion. So I'll query those one-row tables and say, do you really need this table, or is it all covered in the text? So that's the kind of thing that can sharpen your work. I've also queried when I thought a figure would be appropriate. Normally not something a copy editor does, but this text needs a little help. So I said, you know, you have this great description of what a nerve cell does with the dendrites and the axons, but that's very difficult to visualize if you don't have a figure. But that's the kind of thing that can really strengthen your text, help you start to think not only as an author but as a reader, and can help you learn correct turns of phrase, where and when to put emphasis, and just overall improvement of your writing. So I know that I think Richard had a comment that he liked working with a copy editor in that sense. I'd love to invite more comments or questions. You can press 4-star to unmute yourself.
Hi, Laura.
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Elsa Peterson. I hope it's okay. I'm sort of a competitor of yours. I'm primarily a developmental editor and a permissions and art editor. I don't have the technical training to do copy editing. And I just, your success story with the gentleman with the semicolons and so forth was great. And it reminded me of a book that I edited that was going to be self-published by a lady who was telling a personal family story. She gave me her manuscript in hard copy, which is kind of unusual these days, but I found that she had a lot of sentences that may not have been technically run-on sentences, but I felt they read very awkwardly because they needed commas in them to separate one thought from another. And so I tended to add quite a few commas, and when she got it back from me, she said, oh, this is so funny, because I had already given the manuscript to an English professor at the school where I teach. And the main thing that he did was he took out all my commas. And she ended up liking the commas better. They felt natural to her. And I think the difference was that the English professor was probably more oriented towards business type writing and real sort of rigorous nonfiction. And here was a lady who was really writing from the heart and telling a family story.
Yes.
And she needed to sound like herself. So to me, her voice involved these pauses in her sentences, and the commas just naturally belonged there so that the reader could feel her voice.
And that's a very good stylistic point to make. It does need to flow with the author's voice. I mean, there's the author looking like a professional, but there needs to be some unique voice in there as well, and especially when you're writing a memoir or something on a more personal level. The commas can make all the difference. And it could be that this professor was trained in, like, say, the AP style, which was Associated Press, where they don't love it. Oh, man, they just hate the comma.
Exactly.
Style. And it used to be more scientific publishing, and medical publishing didn't use commas, but they're embracing the comma again. Some of it goes back to the days when type was set by hand, and each letter was a separate block that had to be placed. And so commas took up space. Commas had to be set, and commas cost money.
Sure.
So a lot of people will take them out and hate a comma, but you do end up respecting the voice of your author, and that was a great call to make. And I'll also submit, I'm not really your competitor. I think you do work that I probably don't generally touch. But there's wonderful support. Yeah, there's wonderful support all along that. And everybody who's – excuse me, I had another problem there. everybody who's listening to this telecourse will get my contact information, and I would love to hear from you if you do editing and what levels you do so that I can refer people to you when they come to me and I can't help them.
Lovely. Thank you.
Great. Any more questions and experience on what you might have learned from an editor?
I have a question here about this vicious cycle, which, of course, you are referring much more authentically, giving the Webster Dictionary's reference. But in economics, we use vicious cycle for poverty, like a vicious cycle, and then there's a virtue circle. So I've never received really negative comments or correction about this one. Lately, I've submitted one of the articles about this urban slums, and I have used the word vicious cycle when I was going for poverty, and I've used the virtuous circle when I was going for everything going positive, increasing the per capita income, and there was no comment. So here I'm a little concerned. I don't know, of course, to follow what you're saying.
This is excellent. First, I want to set your mind at ease. The dictionary is great, but then there are content-specific context. Like in economics, if vicious cycle is a common phrase, then it's correct there, and it would be correct and left as it is in an economics text. And if virtuous circle is a common phrase and is well understood within economics, then it's correct, and I wouldn't change it.
I see.
Does that make sense? Every field is going to have its own terminology.
Right, right.
That might supersede the dictionary. I'm talking of someone in just general text. Uses the phrase.
Yeah, no, that now it makes sense. Because
I
don't know which course I should take and follow.
Definitely, I mean, there's general terms, but specifically what's it within your field. Go with that.
Okay.
Because I've queried people saying, you know, I don't recognize this word you're using, but is that standard in your field? Because I don't find it in my dictionary. It still may be valid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily an expert in every field. People ask me when I edit math, oh, you read the math? I'm like, well, no, I don't understand it. But I know how to read it as if it's a sentence and when the subscript might be missing and when there needs to be space around the operators and so on.
Okay.
Laura?
Yes.
Hi, this is Maria. Thank you so much for the workshop. It's very informative.
Oh,
I have
good.
A question about hiring a copy editor versus a substantive editor.
Okay.
And my question to you is, I recently worked with an editor that told me that she does substantive work. And when I reviewed the work after it was being corrected, I didn't notice much substantive tailoring of the content. If anything, I noticed some word deletions or replacement of some words, which I think that's part of copy editing, because I'm new with this process of hiring somebody and knowing what exactly they're doing. But and I understand the substantive editors charge a lot more than copy editors, and so how do you deal with a situation like this?
Okay. It helps, and I'll talk about this just a little bit, to outline ahead of time what the expectations are for client and editor. Because when an editor says, I do substantive editing, they may have a different thought of what that means to you. You may be expecting, well, I need you to reorganize and tell me where I'm weak. And
I was very explicit.
I'm sorry?
I was very explicit of what needed to be focused on and what needed work, which at least I thought needed work.
Okay, and did she have he or she have any comments on those things?
The comments were very minor, and
okay.
I'm assuming based on those comments that the paper is fine, but I have to wait and see what my mentor thinks, but the comments were minor.
Yeah, if you weren't happy with it, then that should say it all. If you're not happy with the work, then either that editor was not the right editor for you, or somehow there was a miscommunication, or she didn't have time to devote to it. It's a little hard to say. So you might want to speak with the person you work with and say, you know, I was expecting this. I don't feel I got it. You know, I'm assuming you thought it was okay, but you didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be the kind of question that you want to talk to them about and possibly find someone else who might work with you better.
How do you know how much time somebody should spend on a document of 10 to 12 pages or so?
They should give you an estimate. Okay. Now, substantive editing is going to take different amounts of time than copy editing. I mean, for me, I tell people, if your book is this long, X number of pages, it will take me about X number of hours to do it.
Okay.
I have a standard way, and then I said, and I charge this much per hour, so you get a ballpark figure of how much it's going to cost, depending on how much editing it needs. I'm not entirely certain how developmental or substantive editors price their services. Because they may say, well, I'm going to read it, but I'm not going to go through and line edit. But I'm going to think about this, or I've got experience here. So you're really paying for their experience and their creative thoughts.
Okay.
And I might need to leave that up to another teleconference from a developmental or substantive editor on that. Would probably be the best person to ask.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hello, Laura?
Hello, yes.
Yes. Thank you so much for just covering so many of the topics that I really wanted to hear about. One of the things that I was thinking about when the individual talked about, you know, not being satisfied with editing, don't we have a contract agreement that outlines some of the things that they're going to cover that probably will help us, you know, to define what it is that you're looking for, what they're going to be giving, you know, mm-hmm. us when we decide to go ahead with somebody who edits. Now I understand it's different types of, you know, editors.
Yes.
They'll be able to outline in a contract agreement what it is that they're going to cover, and if it's not covered, is there a way that we can, you know, work together in terms of, you know, figuring out what it is that was not covered? Is that a good way to go about trying to get what you need done on the articles or books?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure because I'm new to the process as well.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, I'm not sure, you know, what they will be doing, but now I understand from this teleconference that the copy editor, technical editor, all of those things are different, and so they may have different types of tasks that they may be doing on your paper
mm-hmm.
that may be different from a developmental editor.
Okay, I think that'll help us segue right into our next section, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay, because it'll talk about getting an agreement in writing. So our next section, and I'm going to, since we're running around 2:50 p.m. Eastern time right now, I'm going to go ahead and do this next section so we can finish up and take the final question. So the next one is finding an editor to work with. There's a lot of different ways to find an editor. If your work has been accepted for publication or been submitted for publication, the publisher might have some suggestions for you. They might tell you, well, we'd like you to have this edited before we look at it again, and then you can ask, do you have someone you suggest? I get a lot of work from a publisher on that level working for their authors who are pre-accepted, and the author pays me for that. So sometimes the publisher will be willing to give you some names, which can be useful. It can be very useful to have your work edited by someone who knows what that publisher wants and can go ahead and put it in that house style. You can get referrals from other writers. Anybody that you know, say, hey, has anybody worked with an acquisitions editor, a substantive editor, developmental editor, or technical editor? Who did you like? Did you like the experience? Was it worthwhile? And get some names that way. Of course, there's some associate members through the TAA, such as myself, Archer Editorial Services, Ann Greenberger, Author Assist. Those were three names I saw listed just under the A's. And you can find that, I believe, in the membership section of the TAA site. Some of us offer discounts to TAA members. You can search on LinkedIn and other sites. There are a lot of freelance editors available. So much editing is done freelance or consultant. Many publishers don't have editors on staff, or at least not copy editors. They'll have acquisitions editors and what they call project editors, who are really project managers. So copy editing is almost always done outside of a major publisher, so there's lots of copy editors available. Those are some of the ways to find an editor. When you're looking for one to hire, there's some things you need to look for, specifically experience working with the kind of publication you're doing, whether it's journal articles, books, textbooks, web material, any other kind of material that you're publishing, experience with that particular kind. Availability, because a lot of editors need lead time. I get really busy. It takes at least 2 weeks to get onto my schedule. If you need editing done, you have to contact me. Don't do it the week before it's due. And a lot of editors will get very busy. So it's best to contact an editor and say, I have this project, I have this timeline, are you available? Are you experienced? It can help to find someone who's experienced in your subject matter, but it's not always necessary. And sometimes it can be a benefit to have someone who's not an expert in your material, especially if you're writing for a general audience. So, for instance, I'm talking about the economics that just came up. If you're writing a macroeconomic theory textbook and it's for people who are interested, sort of the armchair economist, it can really help to have an editor who's not an expert economist, because they'll be able to tell you, this is kind of confusing. You might need to express this a little more clearly, and they can break it down and make it a little more accessible for your audience. Because once you know the lingo, it's a little hard to remember that other people might not know the lingo. When you're working with an editor, it's perfectly okay to ask for a sample edit. And I do give sample edits. I recently gave one to someone who found me. I said, let me edit your introduction. It's about 10 to 15 pages. And let me show you what I can do. Because it's one thing to say, well, I check grammar and spelling and facts and notes and bibliography. It's another thing entirely to show you what that means. And so I'll do a sample edit, and I do this in Word with revisions turned on. That's fairly common now, so you can see all the changes that I made. And I will even put comments to the author in the text. Here's why I changed this. Here's why I changed this. Here's a query I have for you. This is the kind of thing the publishers will ask you, so you might want to address it now. And as you were mentioning about what you expect from an editor, I think it's a very good idea to ask for and get an agreement in writing. I have been asked for this, and I'm happy to provide one, but I don't usually have such an agreement when I work for publishers because it's a standing relationship. But for the first project, when you're working with any kind of editor, it's good to get an agreement which will spell out what you want from them, what they can provide to you, the agreed-on timeline, especially on the timeline, the timeline you're looking to complete, because it can slip. And so it might hurt to say, well, I might be a week behind, in which case I'll give you notice that it's going to be a week behind and we need to extend. Or the person has the ability to say, wow, this ended up being a much heavier edit. It's going to take me longer and it's going to charge you more. They should let you know if that's happening. On the flip side, they should also let you know if it's going much easier and isn't going to take as long. So that keeps the communication above board. And it can help just spell out everything for everybody. Once you're comfortable with an editor, if you want to use that editor again and again, you may not need an agreement each time. That's entirely up to you. But that's what I have about finding an editor. Definitely ask for a sample. Now, if you have a journal article you're submitting and it's only 15 pages long, I don't think you're going to get a sample edit of 15 pages. But you might get the first section, maybe the introduction and maybe the methods. Get a taste for what the editor can do with that. So I've kind of thrown that information out there. It's coming on close to 3 o'clock, but I would really like to open the floor for more questions and experiences. You can press 4-star to unmute yourself.
Hi, Laura. It's Elsa again.
Hi, Elsa.
Hi. Since I have worked in-house and freelance as a developmental editor, I thought I could just shine a tiny bit of light onto that, the difference between an in-house developmental editor and a freelancer.
Oh, please do.
What I found when I worked in-house was that the authors would generally tend to think, oh, if my developmental editor is an employee of the company, that means I'm getting the red carpet treatment, and if they're giving my project to a freelancer, that must mean that they don't care that much about me. It was actually the other way around,
mm-hmm.
because those of us who were in-house were saddled with a lot more projects, and we mainly had to just sort of push them through. So we could do some substantive editing where we would actually read the material, but a lot of it was just checking for, well, how many main sections do we have in a chapter? There's 9 in this chapter and there's only 3 in this chapter. We need to balance that out. Things that were on the big picture level like that.
Yeah.
Another thing that we would do in-house is we would evaluate people's proposals when they had not written a textbook for the company in the past. And I think a developmental editor can really, really be helpful there, because we would see proposals a lot of times where it was fairly well written, but the person's concept of what this textbook was going to do didn't really align with the way the course was taught, according to what we were told by our sales force and so forth. Being assigned to a freelance editor is actually a mark that you're probably going to get more in-depth attention. But then another question would be, if your project is assigned to a freelancer, is to ask that person up front, what level of editing have they asked you to do? Because they may have been given a very small budget from the company, and they may not have the time. They may be only allowed to work on, 3 or 4 hours per chapter, and you feel that you really need a whole day per chapter. So there's the designation developmental editor can mean a lot of different things, and it's probably important for the author to ask questions up front about that.
I will say that as a freelancer copy editor who works for publishers, I rarely work for the authors, and I rarely connect with the authors in that case. I usually deal only with the publisher. But the publisher will tell me, we've taken a look at the book. They'll let me know any specific issues, like they use footnotes and we want endnotes. That's easy. That's the kind of thing I'd be expected to check. They'll let me know of any other problems that they expect me to check, and they'll have usually a very reasonable estimate of how much time they think it will take. Particularly Oxford University Press will tell me, here's the book, here's the issues, we want you to do this, this, and this, here's the budget and the schedule based on what we think it will take you to do. And it's usually quite right. Occasionally I'd say, something really, really bad came up and there's this really huge problem that's going to take a long time to fix. And sometimes that means it goes back to the author. And sometimes that means, we'll shift the deadline and we'll shift the budget.
Laura, hello, this is Maxine. You had you promised to give the cost for the appropriate cost for a copy editor.
Thank you.
One
for
of the other speakers. Okay.
I'm going to talk about what I charge because I know I'm sort of in the right ballpark. So as far as copy editing goes, I charge generally a rate of $25 an hour. Now for TAA members, that's $20 an hour. I knock 20% off because I like you. And what I tell people is I work at a rate of about 10 manuscript pages per hour. A manuscript page is double-spaced with one-inch margins all around. So if you give me a single space, say, oh, it's only 200 pages, I'm going to double-space and say, no, it's 400 pages. 400 pages at a moderate copy edit level, not too heavy, not too light, is going to be about 40 hours. That's what I charge. Proofreading generally is billed to the publisher, and the publisher sets that rate. A specialist, if you go, for instance, a medical textbook might want a really, really skilled medical editor who can charge, depending where they're located, $30 and up. I'm located in North Carolina, so I don't have to charge as much as those people who are located in New York City. Some of that's cost of living.
Mm-hmm. That's a great thing.
Now, yes. That helpful? Substantive editors will charge differently. I'm not even sure how they estimate their time because it's not necessarily by the page. Any other questions, comments? Silence is deafening. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for being a great audience. I really appreciated your questions and experiences. It enlightened me, so I've got maybe the next time I teach this, I'll have more to offer.
Laura, could you send us your email or contact information?
I believe that will be sent to you automatically.
This is Kim Pollack, and I will be sending you a follow-up. Everyone on the call will be sent a follow-up email, and it will include information about how to contact Laura.
Okay, great.
Thank you,
Thank you,